This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. German violinist Anna Sophie Mutter has been touring the world as a star soloist since she was a teenager. She's 48 now with two children, and she shows no signs of slowing down. She began as a prodigy and then matured into a glamorous ambassador for classical music. The spectacular gowns she's known to wear while performing are often as much of a draw as her considerable powers as a soloist. When the Boston Symphony Orchestra opens its 131st season this evening at Symphony Hall, Anna Sophie Mutter will be at the helm. She's playing all five Mozart violin concertos across two nights. We caught up with her at a recent rehearsal. In between solo passages, Mutter guides the orchestra with graceful circles of her bow arm. Since the departure of music director James Levine at the end of last season, the BSO has been without a chief conductor. And tonight, Mutter will play and conduct the Mozart concertos at the same time. That was, in fact, the common practice in Mozart's era. And when I got a chance to sit down with Mutter, she disputed my use of the word conducting to describe what I had just seen her do.
I want to make a distinction between conducting and leading. Obviously, if I would conduct, then I couldn't play at the same time. So does the orchestra need a conductor for a Mozart concerti? No. They need a leader for the Mozart concerti, but they don't need physically a conductor who is beating every single bar in a 4-4 bar. That's almost an insult for such a great orchestra. They need the inspiration of an interpretation, of phrasing, and unifying my colleagues around me in really listening very closely so that in a chamber music setting, we can be as spontaneous as it's impossible to be with the conductor.
Oh. How's the rehearsal been going so far?
Very, very good. The orchestra plays Mozart with such a natural elegance. You can tell that Maestro Levine has done quite some work on that repertoire with them over the years. It's very difficult to find around the world an orchestra who grasps the idiomatic style of Mozart that fast. And Boston always has been one of the very few orchestras around the world who has the elegance and the naturalness in phrasing which these concerti need.
Well, so over the course of two nights, you're going to be playing and conducting all five of Mozart's mm-hmm. violin concertos, yep. And you're starting with numbers 3 and 5, mm-hmm. which are very familiar to you, as I believe the very first recording you made as mm-hmm. a teenager yep. included numbers 3 and 5.
Yes, that's correct. Actually, I only recently realized that there was this coincidence, but I guess it's not a coincidence because 3 and 5 are probably the most developed and the most interesting of the five concerti, because number 3 has this heavenly adagio where Mozart for the first and only time uses flutes.
What's it like for you playing it now versus when you first played it as a 14, 15-year-old?
I don't remember how it felt 35 years ago, so really I can't compare. But playing it without a conductor and leading myself from the violin with such a wonderful small ensemble, that is very different from obviously what I did as a child, and also our understanding of the style of Baroque music and Mozart's music has very much developed thanks to the authentic style playing movement, and the sound production we use today for Mozart is way different from the 80s.
So just to be clear, you won't be leading the entire orchestra. It'll be the chamber music size.
You know, in Mozart's times, of course, depending on what was around, one did play these concerti with a relatively small orchestra, which is pretty much like driving a Porsche or driving a Chevrolet, you know. I think in driving the Porsche model, which are fewer musicians, there's more transparency of sound, and it is more a chamber music-like setting, which pretty much is in the thinking of Mozart, that you can be exuberantly, how should I say, spontaneous at a given moment, which, of course, with 40 players in your back is less the case than if you have 25 around you.
I'd love to ask you a couple of questions about mm-hmm. your career, because you're at a very interesting point in your career. Just this week, Deutsche Grammophon has released a 40 CD
yes, that's
parked
in America, yeah.
Well, there's so much to be said about what that arc of your career, how it's shown in the box set. Mm-hmm. But I first wanted to ask you a little bit about how you've been a champion of contemporary music. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been talking a lot about Mozart, but it seems that so much of how you've made your mark beyond just the virtuosity of your playing is in contemporary music. Yep. So why is it that, or what passion or interest does the old stuff still hold when you've been playing contemporary music for so long?
Then, of course, you know, whatever you play, at the end of the day, we all have to admit, no matter if you're a conductor, a singer, or a violinist, that Mozart, playing Mozart is the most difficult. Because it's a like a haiku, you know, a Japanese haiku. There are very few words, very few notes, but they mean so much. And one wrong accent, one wrong phrasing, and the whole movement is basically down the drain. Whereas if you play highly romantic music like Tchaikovsky or as a pianist or conductor Rachmaninoff, the focus is not that much on the detail, but on the broader picture. So Mozart always is a very humbling experience. But contemporary music is something which I took a taste to in the mid-80s. And it was Paul Sacher, a friend of the great composers of the last century, who introduced me to Lutoslawski's music. Lutoslawski's music has the most beautiful orchestration, colors, and understanding of the singing quality of the violin. So starting my life as a champion of contemporary music with Lutoslawski was just the perfect way, because I was very suspicious almost of that kind of music, because it didn't really belong to my upbringing as a music student. And therefore, it was quite a challenge. And it remains a challenge, to be honest. And that's why I love it. Because there is always the big question mark. Will I really understand a piece by Sebastian Carrier? Will I be able to grasp what Sofia Gubaidulia really wants between the lines? And then you have, at a given moment, also the opportunity to take the phone and call them up, which obviously you can't do with somebody who has, you know, died in the 18th century.
Mm. You are coming to a city that, of course, has a very long established tradition of mm-hmm. classical music and a great passion for it. But at the same time, you know, the world of classical music finds itself sort of in a long-term transition point. And I think you've recognized that because you've been a champion of trying to bring up younger players. Mm-hmm. So what do you see as the future for what some people believe is a shrinking audience?
I don't think that we have a shrinking audience. I think we have shrinking education around the world. And shrinking education, at the end of the day, means that we will have to deal in coming generation with the shrinking of an audience. It's not yet that bad. But it's a necessity to teach children more than what they need to earn money in their life. Let's face it, we all have a soul, and our soul also needs some kind of nourishment. And we can't go on thinking that life is about consuming, buying things, the new car, the fur coat. I don't know. Of course, we need to consume. That's fine. It's important for the economy. But we have to really get back to the politicians and ensure that our children get what they need mm-hmm. more than anything else in order to have a balanced life, in order to culturally understand each other better, develop more respect for different cultures. Music is a wonderful tool for social growth, you know, for understanding the difference of cultural heritage and so on and so forth. So I think when it comes down to it, we around the world have to follow the glorious example of American sponsorship. Hmm. If you look at the history of these great orchestras here in America, there is really, it's just tremendous. I'm in awe of how private sponsorship is able to keep these orchestras alive. And in Europe, of course, it's great that the state is, you know, paying for most of it. But we Europeans have to learn that if you want to keep culture up, you have to contribute. Your private donation is needed. And that's something where we can learn a lot in America.
Interesting. You mentioned Master Levine, Master James mm-hmm. Levine, and of course he's no longer music director mm-hmm. here. And in fact, the BSO finds itself in a moment of transition because yep. of that. I just wonder, you are going to be opening the season here. Just your thoughts on the BSO now and where this orchestra finds mm. itself at the moment.
Well, they are in fabulous shape. It has always been one of the few orchestras, as I said in the beginning of the interview, who is able to grasp almost any style period. And the leadership quality of every stand in the orchestra is of such high level that the orchestra easily, you know, for months to come, can survive musically without having a new music director, obviously, and one is looking for a new music director. But it is an orchestra who needs another great maestro who will expand their repertoire and just, you know, you need inspiration. But it's one of the great orchestras in the world.
Anna-Sophie Mutter, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you
for taking the time. Violinist Anna-Sophie Mutter performs and leads, as she would say, the complete Mozart violin concertos with the Boston Symphony Orchestra starting tonight at 6. You can find details and watch a video of the rehearsal we observed right now at radioboston.org.
Next week on Radio Boston, Harvard Shakespeare scholar Stephen Greenblatt on how the world became modern. He has a story of discovery about how one manuscript script rescued from 1,000 years of neglect changed the course of human thought. That's next week on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusa, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mossy, and Jason Breslow. We also received help this week from producer Kate Osborne. Our interns are Gautier Giacomoni and Julia Lasagne.
Jeremy Bernfeld is our web producer. Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.